Blog Talk Radio.
Forbidden archaeology, forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.
Blessed are we in the awakening dawn. Blessed are we in the morning. Blessed are we in the light of the day as we enjoy the afternoon.
For the trinity of pre-Hellenic Aegean Bee goddesses, Melena, the Black, Cleodora, famed for the gift, and Daphnis, Laurel. They were magical winged nymphs that were attributed with the power of prophecy and the ability to interpret information from signs in nature. They fed the great god Zeus and taught the art of divination to young Apollo, giving him the gifts he needed to become the god of light, music, and poetry. They were fates, representing the cycles of birth, death, and regeneration. So you see, ladies and gentlemen, it was three nymphs or three female goddess forms that taught these great and powerful male gods. Today we'll be talking about the magical powers of honey and its healing qualities on Green Magic, Green Medicine with your hostess, Ms. Susan Weed. Welcome to another episode of Green Magic, Green Medicine with your hostess, Ms. Susan Weed. I'm Daniel Michael, founder, co-creator of the Main Street Universe Network, and I see Susan is in the queue, so I'm going to go ahead and bring her on. Welcome, Susan.
Green blessings, Daniel. I love how you started the show tonight. Ooh.
Oh, thank you.
That gave me chills. And I'm sitting next to the wood, next to the wood stove, so I'm nice and warm.
Oh, okay. Yeah, don't get too cold now. It's still...
No. It was just that kind of like inner, ooh, excited shiver to bring, you know, the bee goddess here to hover over us as we talk about that. And I think about Zsuzsanna Budapest, my goddess mother, who said to us that the oldest known chant was women humming like honeybees.
Ah.
And that she teaches us a special way to do it so that our skull vibrates in a certain way. And you know, she says that this is passed down hereditarily from her mother to her, from her grandmother to her mother, and so on, back and back and back, and they come from Hungary. And this is a very, very old thing, and we also certainly see this in ancient Crete, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
The honeybees, and the connection between the honeybee and the goddess. And certainly, just on, shall we say, the physical, non-symbolic level, we have, you know, it's been pretty obvious that honeybees are females. And as a matter of fact, people used to not know there were any male honeybees. Because they're not so obvious. And
right,
there's very few of them. And in many hives, as winter comes in, the males are thrown out. It's like, goodbye, we're not feeding you over the winter. So it's very, you know, it's very strong. A true world matriarchal kind of setup in the honeybee thing. And one of the things that has always impressed me is that women like to be seen as doing something together, and men like to be seen as doing it alone. I'm not saying this is true of every woman or every man, but in general, and we have, you know, like the man who did it, but we have the group of women who did it. And I'm told that this, again, comes through our relationship to the honeybee, that the honeybees do it together. When it's cold, the honeybees ball up, and there's this constant kind of seething motion through the ball of honeybees as the ones that are furthest out move closer and closer in, and the ones that are in the center move to the outside so that all of the honeybees stay warm. Despite the fact that they throw the boys out, they have a very egalitarian society.
That's right. They'll be fine on their
own. We mostly focus on, and we certainly can't leave the honeybee without talking at least a little bit about the plight of the honeybee, because the honeybee is the only bee that makes honey. And as human beings, we like honey. Oh, I like my honey. As an herbalist, I like honey, and I like putting herbs up in honey. Oh, the world would definitely be a much grayer, grimmer place without the bright golden sunshine of honey. Nonetheless, honeybees are not native to the United States. And they are, you know, one of those exotic introductions. And they very much disturbed the populations of native bees here. Now, when we think about it, we realize that honeybees weren't native to North America. In fact, were brought over by the European colonists. And yet we know that native people on the North American continent had been growing crops that needed pollination from insects like beans and squash for thousands and thousands of years. Then we realize that there are native bees. They're not honeybees, but there's native bees to North America. And in fact, they're excellent pollinators. Some of the native North American bees are much better pollinators than honeybees are. So the honeybees, as any invasive foreign species will do, made us think that some of the native bees had gone extinct as the honeybee die-off has occurred. Those native bees that we thought weren't around are coming back. And certainly in my experience of living in the country and living in nature and really being aware of what's going on and looking at what's going on, it's been very exciting for me to see these new bees, especially the carpenter bees. And the carpenter bees drill little holes in my house. We set out on the deck in the spring, and suddenly there's a little of sawdust on your shoulder, and you look up, and there's a carpenter bee busily making its home up in the eaves above there. So there is certainly a problem with honeybees in North America, and it seems that that problem is pretty much among operations where there are both huge amounts of honeybees and honeybee hives and regular movement of those honeybees and honeybee hives and the use of certain chemicals.
Yes. We had, just briefly, we had on an expert beekeeper named Gunther Hauck on our Wednesday show a while back. This is a while back. And he said, well, and they feed them Monsanto corn syrup, and they ship them in from different places and move them around. And then they feed them even more pesticides when the mites get bigger, artificial hives. And he had, like, it's like a whole list of reasons, monoculture, you know. It's an interesting development that's just kind of tragic in a way. They're not really, they're throwing the problem at the problem, kind of.
Exactly, that the bees are getting sick, and then that partly what makes them sick, they're giving them more of it, which is chemicals.
Yeah.
But not to get too deeply into beekeeping, I was kind of astonished when I was first learning about beekeeping that the bees were being fed sugar water. And I also said that you're saying that they're being fed corn syrup, and that's certainly likely. And I said, well, wouldn't it be better if we fed them honey? I mean, I understand, like, especially like this March, the cold has gone on and on and on and on, and, you know, there's nothing for the bees to eat. And if I were keeping bees, I would probably have to feed them now. And what I was told is that even if you feed them their own honey, you run a very great risk of introducing diseases.
Hmm.
And for the sake of the bees, you feed them some kind of sugar syrup to get them through these last hard weeks. It's not as though you feed it to them all the time, right? It's just when there's nothing for them to eat. Now, that hive in nature would die.
Mm-hmm.
Because of weather conditions and, you know, lack of forage. So because we're keeping them, right, we say, well, let me come in and give you a little something to tide you over here. It's not ideal, but again, we're going what I would call athwart nature, which would just have it die. And we're going, oh, no, this is a valuable hive. We're going to keep it. So honey is what we want to focus on, though, especially as an herbalist. As I said, I really love honey. And honey is one of the great medicines in places where they don't have honey and they use other things. As soon as honey is available to them, they stop using those things and they start using honey. Because honey has a suite of properties that are so unique to honey that it truly is irreplaceable. First of all, honey is a humectant. And what that means is that honey draws moisture to itself. It's also called hydroscopic. In other words, water drawing. So if you put honey on, for instance, a burn, the honey will draw moisture out of the air and into the burn and help prevent skin damage from the burn. Apparently, what happens when we are burned is that there's certainly the initial damage from the burn, but that initial damage where cells die causes certain proteins to be released from the dying cells that cause the surrounding cells to start dying too. And honey stops that from happening by making sure there's enough moisture in the area and by being antibacterial.
Mm-hmm.
So honey is now being made available in sterile dressings to hospitals. And hospitals are using the honey dressing because they find that it will heal skin sores, skin ulcerations, suppurations, any problem at the area of the skin much better than anything else they have.
Mm.
They talk about the three stages of wound healing, that when there's a wound of any kind, the first stage of healing the wound is inflammation. And this is a healthy part of wound healing, because inflammation means that moisture, blood vessels, and lymphatic fluids are being brought to the wound. But if inflammation continues, then the area gets congested, and we actually have the opposite of what that inflammatory response was supposed to do, which was supposed to bring things there, and now we get the opposite happening because movement and circulation has been stopped at that area. And we then go on into the granulation, where the new cells start to fill in, and then the final healing of the skin surface. And honey is helpful at all stages, but it's especially helpful at that first stage. So it's a real first aid. The sooner we get the honey on a wound, a burn, or something as simple or personal as a pimple, the sooner that is going to heal. And honey is wonderful on the face because of this humectant ability. So you take honey and you pat it on your skin, on your facial skin, and it's going to draw moisture out of the air and into your skin. And the honey just kind of naturally absorbs into the skin surface. A few years ago, a low-lying area was covered in violet blossoms. This was an area of maybe an acre or more, and the violet blossoms were so thick there that you couldn't take a step without actually trampling them. And I went with my apprentices. As a matter of fact, my daughter went to and made a YouTube of it. So if you want to see us in this glory of violets, I think there's a YouTube of us there. And I made a violet honey that day because there was certainly enough violets to pick to fill a jar. It takes a lot of violets to fill a jar, even though I had a small jar. And then poured honey over that and let that sit for 6 weeks. And then I use this violet honey in lieu of face cream. So rather than putting oil on the skin, which is not really what the skin is lacking is moisture, I put the violet honey on, and violet is a discutient, which means it's an agent that softens skin and evens out skin tone. So violet honey, how simple is that, huh?
Yeah.
Right, and here we are rolling right into spring, and hopefully rolling right into violets in your lawn or violets in your garden, and find a jar, even if there's only a few violets, get a little bitty itty jar, and make yourself some violet honey. It's really just the nicest thing for your skin. Tonight on my blog talk show, one of my past apprentices called in, and she was dealing with irritated eyelids. And it was as though honey walked in the room, sat down next to me, and went, mwah. And I said to her, have you considered honey? And she kind of, she said, well, actually, yes, the idea of using honey came to me. I'm like, yeah, right, came to me too. It's like, mwah. Me, honey, I'm the one. There's irritation, all right, there's redness. Honey can be used, and it doesn't have to be raw honey or special honey or this honey or that honey, although I will admit to loving that. When I was visiting my friend Rena Neesam in Switzerland, we went over the border to France to the Evian district. And there was a honey shop there, and they had at least 50 different kinds of honey. And I mean different kinds of honey, like goldenrod honey, pine honey, daisy honey. I mean, we think of honey as like clover honey, okay? Or somebody might say, hey, there's buckwheat honey. That's right, right? And then there's wildflower honey, which isn't really totally what's produced by the bees, because the bees tend to be kind of monogamous. When they're going out with a flower, they just go out with that flower, and then they move to another flower. So it's often beekeepers, you know, who have small hives, and they mix the honeys together because it's not enough for them to put in the work to make it a varietal. But here was this little shop in this little town with all of these varietal honeys that to the farmers there, it was worth it. It was worth it to notice each bloom, each thing the bees were going to, and to take that honey from that bloom and not mix it together, but to sell it as the individual bloom. I have had a goldenrod varietal that was made here in New York. It was just amazing. So one of the things that you often hear people talking about is bee pollen. And then you also hear about royal jelly and about propolis. And when I was thinking about talking about honey tonight, I thought, oh, maybe next show we want to talk about these other bee products. Since I figured, kind of knowing you a little bit now, that we would both be just really into the whole thing about bees and all of the things that the honeybee can provide us. So we will talk about those things, and those things, interestingly enough, are often viewed by the general public as more medicinal than honey. After all, you can just go buy honey in the supermarket, right? Or you can't buy royal jelly in the supermarket. But the fact of the matter is that the healing properties of all bee products are quite similar, and honey itself is a powerful antibacterial. I think about honey when my throat gets sore, when you know, when you get that like scratchy feeling there at what we call the back of the throat. You go, uh-oh, right? That's when I want to go for the honey. And the honey that I go for is in a rum bottle. I was in Jamaica, and my hostess said to me, would you like to go visit the herb woman? Well, of course I would. So off we set to go visit the herb woman, and we drove on a road, and then we drove on a dirt road, and then we drove on a track, and then we drove cross country, and then we stopped. And we got out, and we continued walking. And fairly soon we came to a small crack in the earth, a ravine, maybe you would say. It was like, you know, maybe 4 or 5 feet deep. And there was a board across it from side to side. And we walked across the board. It was a step or two. It wasn't any big deal. And we continued walking. And then we got to another one of these cracks. But this one was quite a bit deeper, maybe like 9 feet now deep. And there was still just a single board across it, but the board was a little more bowed because it was further across. And we made it across that and continued to walk. And then I saw the next board up ahead, and I thought, oh, mercy. And indeed, the last track was much bigger and deeper. And I will admit to getting down on my hands and knees and crawling across on the board, because I'm just not good with that kind of thing. But I did at last get to the other side, only to be faced with a cliff. And the other people, who had great consideration for my feelings, were not standing around laughing at me, but instead were scaling this cliff. I'm like, oh, All right, scaling a cliff, that I can do. Walking across the board, oh, that I can't do. So we're scaling this cliff, and as I get my nose and my eyes up over the top edge of the cliff, I see what looks to me like the world's largest pile of empty rum bottles. Now, I'm in Jamaica. There's a lot of rum around in Jamaica, but this is a truly enormous pile of rum bottles, and I'm thinking to myself, I don't know if this is going to be okay, my being here, but I just followed my hostess up and over, and it turned out that this herb woman kept honeybees, and she got the local people to bring the rum bottles to her so that she could fill that up with honey, and that's why I have a rum bottle full of honey in my kitchen cupboard, which I use anytime my throat feels a little bit scratchy. Honey goes deep into the respiratory system, and it brings soothing, moisturizing, and opening into the respiratory system. This is one of the reasons why I like to put up herbs in honey. The aromatic herbs are some of my favorites to put up in honey, and toward the end of my growing year, I harvest the lemon balm and the thyme and the rosemary and the mints and chop them each individually and put them in jars and cover them with honey. And then, say I feel, you know, like, okay, well, that sore throat isn't just that little, like, twinge at the back of my throat, but it's really like, ooh, it's a little hard to swallow. So maybe instead of just having a swallow of that nice honey from Jamaica, I'm going to have a cup of sage honey tea. And I'll just take my spoon, stick it down in that sage, get a big glob of those sage leaves and that honey, put it in the cup and pour boiling water over it. And the honey has absorbed the volatile oils from the sage, so it's like an instant tea, ready to go to work and to bring the value of the honey to me and to my lungs and respiratory system, sinuses, the whole works. We're coming to the end of the show, and I wish not to be negligent. And it would be negligent if I did not mention in very strong terms that honey is not safe for children until they are over 1 year old. Honey contains, whether it's raw or heat processed, honey contains the spores, and it doesn't always, and not all honey does, but some honey can contain the spores of botulinus. And botulinus gives rise in the body to a very serious problem called botulism. And the adult stomach has enough acid to kill the botulinus spores, but under 1 year of age, a baby stomach does not have enough acid to kill those spores. And there have, yes, actually been cases of babies dying of botulism because they were given something with honey. So honey is a great food. It's a wonderful herbal medicine, but it's not for the wee ones. And I'll be back next week talking to you more about honey and more about these other kind of bee products, propolis and royal jelly and pollen, each one important in its own right. Who knows, maybe we will even get into bee sting therapy as well. Meanwhile, come and visit me at SusanWeed.com, or if you want a closer relationship, check out WiseWomanMentor.com. And, of course, all of my books are available at the WiseWomanBookshop.com, as well as at that retailer known by the name of a very strong group of women. Once again, I have had a wonderful time with you buzzing around among the uses of honey. Thank you so much for having this show, Daniel.
Yes, and thank you so much. We definitely had a lot of information back to do a half hour, and we do every week.
All right, I'll be back with you next week. Then green blessings, everyone.
All right. Thank you, and blessings to you. You've been listening to Green Magic, Green Medicine with your hostess, Susan Weed. Have a great week.
Blessed are we in the awakening dawn. Blessed are we in the morning. Blessed are we in the light of the day as we enjoy the earth turning. Blessed are we as the twilight descends and the magic of dusk is upon us. And blessed are we in the dark of the night as we slip in.